test. 1, 2, 1, 2. Brooms That Rot.
Now, tonight we're off to a venue where the room itself became part of the performance. And in Vancouver in Canada, there is one room that's been bouncing to the sound of live music for nearly a century. The Commodore Ballroom began its life as an elegant Art Deco dance hall. It later evolved into one of North America's great rock venues. It's been the kind of place to see bands right before they become the biggest bands in the world. But it only holds about 1,000 people. There is something else, though, that makes the Commodore famous. It has a sprung dance floor, which gives the entire floor a distinctive bounce when the crowd gets moving. Aaron Chapman is a Vancouver historian. He's a musician. He's the author of Alive at the Commodore, the story of Vancouver's historic Commodore Ballroom. And Aaron joins us now. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello, it's so good to be with you. I just heard you saying it's early Sunday morning in Australia right now, but it's Saturday early morning where I am now, so I feel quite behind the times right now.
That's right. We can all go back in time by imagining we're there with you. All right, yeah. Take us inside the Commodore on a sold-out Saturday night. What's it going to be like?
Well, it's one of those amazing live music rooms that we're fortunate to have it here in Vancouver. It's based on old sort of British ballroom dance hall design, built in 1930, and it's been constantly used as a music venue ever since. It's amazing to see the litany of people who have played there, because just about everybody on the way up or on the way down has played there, and it's easier to name the acts who haven't played there than the ones that the ones that have. So it's got amazing history to it, and the fact that the building is still there today, and well, you know, there's probably a show there tonight. You can walk into that place where The Clash and David Bowie and Tina Turner and so many great Australian bands that I could name have played there as well. So it's a remarkable room. And there's one thing about there's some kind of sort of sacred geometry going on in the room itself, because there's something about you can walk. There's no seats in the venue. There's some tables on the side and whatnot, but there's that big ballroom floor that you're talking about. So you can move around and sort of watch the show from different angles or from some different sort of raised level or at the back sort of balcony area. And you can really see the musicians and the show very well. It's great sight lines. But also, if you're playing the room, and I've been fortunate enough to play the Commodore myself with a few different bands over the years, you can almost see the faces in the back of the room as well as the ones that are right in the front row. And you could, so there's a real symbiosis there between the audience and the performer on a good night.
Now, tell us about this floor and what it's, just how different it is to what you might experience at other venues.
Well, for the first about 70 years of the venue, the original dance floor was there, and no one really had known what was beneath there. It was a sprung dance floor, so it was the kind of thing that, people who were going to see big band music back in the 30s and 40s and who were doing the Foxtrot and the Charleston and maybe the Lambeth Walk or something like that, would the dance floor sort of gave back a little. And I remember the first time, I went into the Commodore in the 1990s when I was 19 years old. And to walk across that floor, it kind of wiggled a little bit and kind of bounced back as you stepped on it. And it sort of made you laugh as you sort of strode across it. Now, it's interesting that in 1996, after decades of rock bands and people no longer doing the Foxtrot and doing stuff like that, and that there were slam dancing or pogoing, that floor had taken a beating. They had to redo the floor. But it's interesting, when they excavated the floor, essentially, they found what gave that bounce was a lattice work of wood and boards, but also they found some 1930s era tires that were down there, and also these bundles of horsehair that all gave it that bounce. So when they had to redo the floor, gosh, who knew how to get that kind of craftsmanship to build it again? So they redid it, and there's now a cork sort of bounce to it. So it doesn't bounce exactly like it used to, but on a good night when it's shaking, everybody's having a good time either way.
So when you're on it, and if you are dancing, I mean, what do you actually feel as you're dancing on it?
Well, you know, it's great when you've got a band. You know, I remember one of my fondest memories is seeing one of my favorite Australian bands of all time, Weddings, Parties, Anything, at the Commodore. Great Mick Thomas, great singer songwriter from Melbourne there, and you know, so many of their songs are kind of on the one. Everybody's sort of bouncing up and down at the same time. So on a night like that, you're bouncing along in rhythm with everybody else, and you're making the other person bounce as much as you're making that person's making you bounce. And as you're singing along to one of your favorite bands, there's no greater place to be.
Okay, I don't think I've ever experienced anything like this, so I'm unclear whether it's kind of a slightly worrying bounce or just a really fun bounce.
Well, it's a pretty fun bounce. You don't feel out of control. You don't think you're on a trampoline. You're going to get bounced out the window or anything like that. Thankfully, and as I say, since they redid the floor, and they had to do a redo a section of it again just a few years ago, and I was very honored that they actually took a copy of my book live at the Commodore and put it underneath the dance floor. So if somebody, some crew has to redo the floor 50 years from now, they're going to find something to read. But it doesn't have the exact same bounce to it, but the Commodore is essentially, it's sort of more than that. The significance of the room is, as I say, there's seen so many different acts over the years and so many national and international performers throughout the years. I mean, The Clash did their first show outside of the UK in Vancouver in January 1979. You know, U2 did their first show in Vancouver, and that was they didn't even have enough songs to fill the night. They had to play I Will Follow again in the encore because they ran out of songs to do. There's so many bands. There's the blues bands and the folk acts of the 1970s and the country acts. And then as punk came in, you know, the Commodore was wise enough to welcome that in. And that made for just about every legendary punk band worth its salt came through the Commodore. Later on in the 80s, all the new wave acts came through. And, of course, then in the 90s, grunge acts came in. And now you're seeing, of course, electronic dance music and DJs come through. So it's one of those unique rooms that's seen every part of every kind of music. And, you know, any I'm sure there are cities in Australia where you guys live the cities change over the years. There's very few places that can maybe last, you know, almost 100 years. The Commodore will be 100 in 2030. The mere fact that it's still there, it makes up one of those. I often say when I'm sort of giving talks and history talks, Commodore is one of those places in the city that sort of make up the DNA of the city. It's one of those few places that your grandparents could go to, your parents might have gone to, and you can still go to. And that sort of makes a real connection in a city, I think, in a downtown that makes for kind of a wonderful thing. And there's lots of people who have probably met their roommates or wives and husbands at the Commodore over the years. And it's, like I say, it's seen a little bit of everything. It's kind of one of those unique rooms that way.
Aaron Chapman is with us. He's a Vancouver writer, historian, and musician. He's the author of Live at the Commodore, the story of Vancouver's historic Commodore Ballroom. You said that people normally play there when they're on the way up or on the way down, and I guess that's because you only have 1,000 capacity for 1,000 people there. I guess that means it's always relatively intimate.
It is, you know, and there's lots of shows that are there that are sold out, and maybe could have moved to a bigger venue, but the room also has a lot of notoriety to it. And when I was working on the book, I mean, I talked to everybody from Benmont Tench, from the Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, to so many bands that sort of knew the Commodore before they ever played there, and you know, Tom Petty played there in 1976. It's a very well-regarded room. There's lots of bands that when they're coming to town, maybe they'll do two nights at the Commodore rather than do one night somewhere else, just because the bands like the room as well. And I think the Commodore treats them well, and there's the staff and management who run the place and the production people are top people, and the crews are top, that it makes for an experience that you don't have to worry about it when you're playing the Commodore any night.
So if we go back a bit further in the history, it opened in 1930. I think most of us would think that would probably not be great timing for a business venture. So what happened?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, the Depression had kicked in, and Commodore only ran for about 4 months before it had to be shut down. There was just no people, it did not have any money to go out. And that's one of the few times in its history that it ever was vacant for a little while. But surprisingly, about 3 or 4 months later, it reopened, and they managed to, you know, keep it going throughout the Depression. You know, by 1934, the effects of the Depression had sort of, the worst of it was over, so people were The entertainment industry has always been something that, people has survived in a way that even through hard times, people still want to go out and have fun. And I suppose that happened in the 1930s as much as it does today. You know, the economy can be, there are times where the economy is tough, but there's lots of nights where, you know, the Commodore is still full. And there's lots of, whether it's some kids that are out seeing a band that I've never heard of that they know about, or it's an old favorite that's touring through town, or a popular Canadian act, maybe, that's not so well known outside of the country, coming through. Or an international act. I mean, and as you say, it's surprising how many times. I remember seeing Lady Gaga at the Commodore in 2009, and the next thing you know, she was huge. I remember seeing Katy Perry at the Commodore. Next thing, she was on the Super Bowl. So it was one of those places that that if you're a touring act, you're able to sort of check mark before you move on to the next thing. At least you've experienced, right, and you're a part of that history.
Played at the Commodore, tick. But look, back in its history a bit more, it became known as a bottle club. What did that mean?
Ah, that's the thing. Now, I don't know if Australia had the same sort of conservative liquor laws as we had here in Canada, or at least here in Western Canada, for a while. But there were no liquor licenses. There were beer halls and whatnot, but there was no, you couldn't go to a show and have a drink. You would have to bring your own bottle in. You'd smuggle in a brown paper bag, and you'd buy a teapot, maybe full of some ginger ale or some ice, at the table, and you would basically pour your own drinks and whatnot. And if the police did a raid, now the Commodore's on the second floor of a building. You go up a long flight of stairs. So if the police were to show up and looking to do a liquor raid to make sure nobody was drinking, God forbid, the doorman would press a button, and the button would light up a red light on the side of the stage, and that would be a sign for the band to play Roll Out the Barrel, and everybody knew then to hide their liquor bottles under the table. Now, the funny thing is, there would have been off-duty police doing this on some nights, and they would have been doing the exact same thing. So it was this weird dance. It wasn't until the 1960s in Vancouver, and this is, you know, well into the Mad Men era of, you know, people want to go out for a cocktail, they want to see a show, they want to be able to eat and see a show and have a drink. We were late in fact, you couldn't buy a liquor on a Sunday in Vancouver up until 1986. We had things like the Lord's Day Act and stuff like that to prevent it. So we had these very sort of antiquated liquor laws for so many years. And it's interesting, when I talked to Drew Burns, who was the proprietor of the Commodore, who bought the business in 1969, he talked about how he didn't have a liquor license for the first year. So in an effort to make money, if you bought ice from the club, he kept the ice in these earthen bowls that he kept on top of the stove. So you might get your ice over at your table, and you'd say to your sweetie, hey, let's go, we'll have a dance, we'll come back and make a drink. Well, after the dance, you'd come back, you just have a bowl of water because the ice had melted. And so these were the kind of things that the club owners had to do in lieu of, now once he had a liquor license, then he could make money and you know, a room of drinkers going to see the Pogues or going to see you know, a band that a fun band. Well, he was making great money at the bar then, but it for years had this sort of antiquated liquor laws, and we had them all over the city then. I don't know if Australia had the same thing in the beginning. Probably not. You guys were a little more free flowing, I think.
Just a little bit more, I think. We were famous for something that we had called the 6 o'clock swill, where all the pubs shut at six, so everyone finished work at five.
Pubs closing early, yes, like in the UK.
An hour,
yes.
Drinking very, very hard before the pubs closed.
Right.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
But I know that in Canada, I mean, I think there are some states or provinces, aren't there, in which the government literally controls all the sale of alcohol still.
Well, that happens here in British Columbia, where I live. You go to a government bottle shop and you buy your liquor there. Now, they do have other sort of independent stores. You can buy beer and things like that. And we've opened it up a lot since then. Essentially, the province still orders the liquor. And I think in terms of venues, you order the liquor through, you know, liquor distributors via the province. So this has come up most recently with the province banning American bourbon and products like that because of Donald Trump's tariff threats. And that's all the news up here in Canada these days.
Yeah. Now, Aaron, what was it that prompted you to write a book about the Commodore?
Well, I've been a historian and author. I'd written another book about another venue in town called the Penthouse Nightclub that is famous and it's infamous in its own in its own right. And I was thinking, based on the success of that, I thought, yeah, I was kind of surprised that nobody had written a book about the Commodore in Vancouver. It's such a mainstay here in the city, and it got lots of newspaper write-ups and press attention over the years. But I thought, the Commodore is going to be 100 years old in a few years, and maybe now would be an interesting time to look back and write about the history of the place. And I'd also probably been well sort of situated, because I knew the management very well. I was friendly with the Live Nation folks that operate part of it, and friendly with other concert promoters in town from my time being a local musician here in Vancouver. So I had a lot of access to people, and I had played there, I had whatnot, so it was kind of a fun idea to try and approach. I even worked there for a little bit as a doorman, kind of to embed myself as an embedded reporter in there, to kind of see it from within the venue like that, mm-hmm. and kind of whatnot. So it was a very fun book to write. I had initially also signed on to do, the Commodore didn't have accurate records of, oh yeah, you two played here sometime, what was that, 80, 81, so the management had asked me to go through the archives, the newspaper archives, and find, make a record of every show that ever happened at the Commodore. Well, you can imagine, that's like breaking out of jail with a soup spoon. And it took me about a year of going down to the Vancouver Public Library newspaper archives and going through the microfiche. Now, you can do this now online a lot easier, but I began to build a database that went back to 1973 to every night, every band, every opening act that played up until about 2015. And the Commodore has just sort of rehired me, actually, to update that to get it up to the present day. So it's when I did that archive, and as I say, it took forever to do. It was a kind of a maddening process in a way. But it also revealed to me, you could see the trends in music. You could see how sort of the blues and folk scene was something popular in the 70s, and then all of a sudden we get punk rock, and that takes over for a while. And then the new wave bands and different, you start to see different world music artists come through, and you can see how the music vocabulary of not only what we were seeing here in the city or in Canada, but we were fortunate enough to get so many different international acts. I mean, as I say, some of my favorite bands are Australian bands that came through those years: the Hoodoo Gurus, the Painters and Dockers, Nick Cave, Grinderman, his more recent act that he had, Weddings, Parties, Anything, as I mentioned, one of my faves. So many different Midnight Oil came through and always rocked the house, And
of course they did.
And it would be the fun thing is there's lots of Australians that live in Vancouver or live up in Whistler Mountain, one of the ski resorts up there. It's so there's a big Australian quotient here in Vancouver as well, and those folks would come out in force when Cat Empire and more recently, and I think acts like that would come through, and so it's really fun. Sometimes when there's a different band, a British band playing, well, you'll see all the expats come up for it, or if it's a Jamaican or a reggae band, well, the whole, from across the city, those folks come up because that's the thing to do.
You get all the Irish out for an Irish band.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah. Look, before I let you go, tell me, Aaron, I mean, because you went there as a punter and a muser, of all the nights that you were there at the Commodore, what is the one that lives, in your memory, that perhaps your best night ever?
Oh, gosh, that's hard to say because there are so many of them. And I probably would divide them into shows I've seen and shows I played. I think one of my favorite shows, and it was such a rarity, was to see Tom Waits there. And I was close enough that you could see the time on his wristwatch. I was, right up front, my buddy and I went, we were fans. We planted ourselves there, and we didn't go to the bar because if we had to go, we'd lose our spot. So we stayed there all night. Our legs were aching by the time. But that was an amazing performance. And I gather Waits played that because he was sort of playing historic venues on that tour and had specifically selected that as his Vancouver stop because of the history of the place. And I suppose one of my favorites was I played in a band called the Town Pants here in Vancouver, and we used to do all sorts of bush ballads and sort of revved up Celtic rock type stuff. And my dad came to the show, and he was quite an old guy. He had probably danced with my mother at the Commodore in the 40s and 50s and whatnot. And they gave him a table with his name on it, reserve table. The security escorted him to his table, and he was he had all sort of been a little bit suspicious of my music career and wondering where I was, these grotty little venues I was playing. But because we were playing there, it suddenly legitimized everything. And the place was full, And he suddenly thought his kid was Mick Jagger or something. He didn't never seen. So to leave him with that impression, and he didn't see the Tuesday nights in Sudbury, or he didn't see the Sunday night show in El Paso that we did, or whatever. He was always left with that impression. So the Commodore is sort of thankfully in a lovely place in my mind with my late father, that he at least got to see a show in a great venue like that.
Yeah, Aaron, thank you so much. Sounds like a fantastic venue and so many stories. It's been really wonderful of you to join us here on Nightlife tonight.
Great to speak with you. Do come and see us at the Commodore sometime.
All right, and you enjoy your day, because you've got all
you
of
too.
Saturday ahead of you.
That's it.
Thanks, Aaron. There's Aaron Chapman. He's a Vancouver writer, he's a historian and a musician. His book is Alive at the Commodore, the story of Vancouver's historic Commodore Ballroom.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.